What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Always 2. There are a Star Wars discussion podcast. I am Josiah, here with my co-hosts Brady and Steven. I should have learned that in Japanese for this episode. That would have been cool. Anyway.
Hi. Give me an hour. I can go figure that out.
Well, we don't have an hour, Steven. We have a podcast to record. Please introduce yourself.
Hello.
That's all. Thank you. This Adios. Week, this week, we are covering Star Wars Visions Season 1, Part 1. We'll be talking about the first five episodes of Visions.
I thought it was four.
It's the first five.
There's nine episodes.
Five is nine.
But we were talking about it in the lobby of our studio. We were talking about whether
it says
four
studio.
Or five.
Oh, you erased it. It said studio. On the
it
wall.
Said studio, but
no, because five is the ninth Jedi, and I want to talk about the ninth Jedi.
Okay,
it's a good one. It's a good one.
I guess.
Oh, geez. All right. Well, we're gonna. We're just gonna talk about each episode, kind of what we liked about it, what they all like. I think we had a conversation about talking about what if at all they change about the Star Wars universe. We had even talked about maybe like whether or not they need to be like a separate alternate universe or they can survive in the universe as we know it.
The canonical verse.
But anyway, all of that being said, Brady has three sheets of paper and is ready to go.
He's more prepared than either of us combined.
So give us a little paper sound effects, and then we'll go into the cue the music.
Is that your catchphrase?
My catchphrase is saying goodbye in Spanish.
No, I think it's cue the music.
I still think we should end the podcast with May the Force go with you. But well, you know, that's just me.
That's how you end it.
Yeah, but that's your sign off. Yeah, but that's like the end of the podcast.
Well, the end of the podcast has always been adios since the beginning of
the
podcast.
It's always been him and I fighting over who says adios.
It's never been a fight. It's always been me waiting for you to say alrighty, and then I say all the. Anyway, episode one of Star Wars Visions is titled The Duel. It is a
fantastic episode.
Does anyone have the? Actually, I'll pull up. The studio is IMDb. Might not have it. Hold on.
Honestly, like, I appreciate it on like a film level more, but like, it's still not anywhere near my top favorite.
So first time around, absolutely loved this one. This is also when I was getting into Ghost of Tsushima, and so I was like hardcore into the Kurosawa side of.
I'm
film
always
and all
into
of that.
Kurosawa, so.
I was not a huge fan. This one, we've talked about, the thing that makes Star Wars, and it felt like this one was missing that.
I think it's the fact that he's walking from town to town, as opposed to, like, coming and going via spaceship.
I don't know, it just, like, it felt Star Wars, but not nearly as much as the rest of the episodes in this series.
It felt like it majorly drew roots from, like, you know, the whole samurai thing from the Kurosawa film.
Yeah,
Seven Samurai specifically.
The original inspiration that George Lucas had for, you know, the Jedi and such. But
it's part of why I love this episode.
I think my favorite parts, like, I wrote 3 points of this to this one compared to like a page and a half of Tatooine Rhapsody.
Tatooine Rhapsody's freaking great.
Because there's a lot going on in that I think Steven misses. Because he is an a cappella fan and not a true music fan.
Excuse you.
I think my favorite parts are the fact that Bossk is a samurai.
Yeah.
Like, that is in fact Bossk.
Oh, really?
That is his same voice actor, and originally, before they changed the subs, it was named in the subs Bossk.
Oh, sick.
Yeah, it is in fact Bossk. That nice. Is their rendition of Bossk. Nice. I liked that assassin medical droid, the one that spins. Doug is piloting that.
Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't notice that the first time.
I didn't either. I thought it was just a reprogrammed was an Imperial probe droid.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But it is not.
There's a Doug up in there, and I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
I also loved the insert theme for the the actual Sith, we're going to call her, because, you know, the other guy is called a Ronin. It gave me very Ghost in the Shell vibes, specifically the second film.
Really? I haven't seen Ghost in the Shell movies in a long while. I'll have to go back and...
Yeah, the second one specifically, it gives a very, very Ghost in the Shell vibe to me. And
well, I'm okay with that, so...
Yeah, I grew up on Ghost in the Shell.
Me too. So. Yeah, I think earlier you guys said, like, it felt the least Star Wars-y, and I think that is...
No. Josiah said that.
Oh. Well, I think it's because he is walking from town to town.
I think... I noticed that. I thought that was really strange.
To me, what it did was it brought this particular story from the context of a galaxy far, far away to just
a planet,
a village far, far away.
Mm-hmm.
And it was less of a, you know, he's wandering the galaxy, and to he's just wandering the countryside. And this happens to be a world that has Star Wars-esque technology. Yeah. So like the big van truck that they're all in, there's their armored car was Star Wars looking. But, you know, it's not a shuttlecraft that can take off and go dock in a Star Destroyer.
Yeah, it's also interesting, too, is that, like, if you notice the, like, bandits, quote-unquote, as they're called, they all have different era helmets from Imperial.
Yeah.
But none of them have visors.
Some of them even look First Order.
Yeah, no, they're, the one on the hillside is a First Order helmet, but it doesn't have a visor.
One of them did have a visor.
Which one?
It's when they're first getting out of the transport.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stormtroopers does come out, and he has on a helmet, and you can very clearly see the First Order, the black
visor pattern.
And because I saw that, and it was very prominent. I'm like, so this storyline is taking place after
the fall of the First Order.
Yeah, after the fall of the First Order. So because it's like, those stormtroopers have now fallen into banditry rather than...
I would think that this is long after.
Well, yes. I wouldn't even correlate it with the First Order, because there's the one to the left of the bandit leader, quote-unquote, has a scout trooper helm. And then the one on the right has a stormtrooper helm.
Yeah, like it's just kind of...
They're all mixed. They're hodgepodge. So
yeah, that's why I was thinking it was more of like a... They had raided somewhere and gotten these helmets.
But they reference them as like it is after Imperial remnants, but I would just say it's the Galactic Empire at that point. Shout out to the astromech with a micro missile pack on the back.
That was pretty
cool.
Yeah. Little seemed like he was a similar model to Chopper.
I don't know. We can't.
He sounded more like a standard R2 unit.
Yeah, like an R2 or his look was more R4.
Like he was like wider. He was a little stockier, and he had a shape similar to
that. Could have been the style though.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I do like though how his rockets were. They could track even when not in line of sight.
Oh yeah. Because
two of them went after the
one on the hill guy.
The one on the hill and the Sith lady.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She got taken down in the best way possible.
Oh, I love that he tricked her like that.
The decoy was gold.
I like his lightsaber. It's a sheath and a double blade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's interesting because when he tricks her, he pulls out his original, his single blade, which is the one he pulls out initially, and then he flips it around and stabs her with the other end of that sheath.
Yeah, the sheath.
He never uses that second blade.
Oh.
Yeah, like...
I thought that was the second blade.
No, because when he gets done, he flips it around, and it's long.
Yeah, I figured it was just a long-handled lightsaber, and I was like, I like that lightsaber.
No, his sheath was a lightsaber.
Yeah.
But it was also a sheath.
It was a lightsaber.
I can't remember... The creator of this episode has talked about how, like, this is a world where there's, like... Like lightsaber augments or attachments are normal. So like the umbrella,
right,
is the same vein of attachment as the sheath. And so the sheath would be like an auxiliary to his main lightsaber.
Which is interesting because people have always said that the umbrella is a single lightsaber.
It is.
And I've always thought it was nine or however many spokes. No.
Because when she pulls it out, they all go in together.
But there's no reason why she wouldn't turn off those nine to go to a single blade.
Yeah, but the way it comes out is perfect. It's like fluid to look like as I'm pulling it off of this blade, these are coming and like it. It's,
you're talking about the umbrella.
Yeah, yeah. It's obviously meant to seem as if it is the single blade being deflected into the.
It is a splitter.
Well, and anyways, the reason I say that is I bring it up is because it's a possibility. Unless the director has stated otherwise. It's a possibility because the sheath would be a separate lightsaber,
mm-hmm.
as an augment.
Yeah, the
because the blade itself is in the statue.
Yeah, no, and the first one he has, and right. then when he that second one he stabs her with the bottom end and right. like, ignites
now,
it.
I wish they would have gone with.
It's very interesting.
He had a Shoto, because that would have like one gone along with like
the more samurai
classic samurai
they had the katana and the
shoto
the tanto
yeah tanto though is the little dagger
uh-huh.
And samurai they have two full-length swords it's not a sword and a tanto
sometimes it depends
but usually that tanto will be a third that's usually on the back of there.
On the back or on the front.
Right. It's not the two that are like on the hilt on the hip.
It's usually either a wakizashi and then a katana. But anyways, it was interesting. I liked it. Does it not? My question is because he doesn't ignite it. He pulls it drawn.
Mm-hmm.
So does it never shut off?
Mm-mm. From my understanding, no.
My understanding was that the sheath just kind of acted as a...
Like a kill switch.
Kind of. So, like, when the tip of the blade reaches...
The other end of the...
What's the word I'm looking for? The barrier mm-hmm. of the sheath, then the blade dissipates. So it appears to be drawing and sheathing when, in fact, the blade is just shortening until it turns off.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is one of those things where we're going to need, like, you know how, like...
We need the creator to weigh in on it.
We need the creator to weigh in on it or dissect how it works mechanically. Because we've had those in, like, the Star Wars books.
At
the
same time, I enjoy just the speculation.
Sometimes, you know, people like to actually see how it works.
I mean, sure.
You know. Anyways.
But as long as that doesn't happen, I'll be right. That's all I care about.
Okay, Steven.
I'm also trying to figure out if he is actually a Jedi. And I think he is a Jedi, but he may have lost his blue crystal and instead just happens to use red kyber.
Well,
happens to use red crystals to fulfill it.
He very specifically does not correct, like, because... The kid's like, "Are you a Jedi?" And he doesn't respond.
But that's not a no.
Yes. So, I would think he's more along the lines of like a fallen Sith.
A redeemed Sith?
No. A fallen...
What's a fallen Sith?
The opposite of a fallen Jedi.
I'd say he'd probably just be like a Maverick. Just be like a...
What if he's just...
Because he has like seven... Kyber crystals, mm-hmm. implying that he's hunting Sith or he's just holding on to them in case one of them goes out. Because if the blade doesn't turn off, it must put pressure on the crystal.
Yeah, that's possible. If the blade doesn't turn off, then the crystal might eventually fracture.
Yeah. I always got the idea that he's like specifically hunting
me too.
Sith.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that at all. That's irrefutable. I do think he's hunting Sith, but the fact that he's collecting crystals and it has a lot of a speculation value.
So I figured they were just trophies. And watching it the second time, an interesting thought occurred to me. I was like, okay, what if... There's two possibilities he might be. I never considered that he was a Jedi. But I thought, okay, he could either be a Sith who's out hunting other Sith.
But why wouldn't he kill the whole village? What is the point in that?
Because his goal is to reduce the Sith out there so that he's the last one and thus the strongest one. Though I thought more likely he's on a quest to redeem himself, or he's going to go kill the Sith as a way to kind of right his past wrongs. And the crystals are trophies to remind himself and keep track of, like, this is how redeemed I am. I am seven crystals into redemption.
So he's a fallen Sith.
He's a redeemed Sith.
He's
a Sith on the path of redemption.
He's a falling Sith. Falling Sith sounds like a punk band.
Like Vampires in the Attic?
Like every name Josiah comes up with is a punk band.
Yeah. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed it. Just a quick shout out. The two celebrity cameos in this episode for the English voiceover are Lucy Liu and Brian T. Brian T is the... he plays someone in...
The Sullust?
Brian T is this guy. He's in Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift, Ninja Turtles, No Tears for the Jed, The Wolverine.
Which Ninja Turtles?
The new one.
Ugh.
Hold on. He's... Do you recognize this guy?
Yeah, no, yeah. I recognize him. I recognize him from The Wolverine.
He's from Chicago Med. Anyway, he played the Ronin.
Oh, he was the Ronin.
Lucy Liu was the
Sith lady.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, any final thoughts on the duel?
Great episode. I actually, watching it the second time, I really liked the... In the artwork, they gave little, like, streaks of white. Like, just random streaks of white. In it to kind of give that sense that this was recorded on old rolls of film.
So obviously,
it had like cigarette burns and stuff, like the cigarette holes in the film.
So good.
Yeah, I like those little details to give it that like sense of this is something that was done in the 50s.
I really enjoy the look. I feel like the combat and like the fight is like fairly okay compared to the rest of Visions.
Yeah, it was pretty... To me, it kind of felt like standard Star Wars choreography. I did like the title card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The wide shot on the village, and then you just get like the white, you know, Khanjeed Arubesh.
Mm-hmm.
For just the duel. I was like, oh, that's really cool. I like that.
But yeah. It was all right. The second time around, I did not enjoy it nearly as much as I did the first time I watched it.
I enjoyed it a lot more.
All right. Moving on.
But if we're having this, I'm going to be stuck on Tatooine Rhapsody a little bit.
Tatooine Rhapsody.
It's so good.
First time around, I was like, it's Star Wars. It's all right. This time, I loved it so much.
Why?
It felt so... I don't know what about it. It felt so Star Wars. And the music is amazing. I went back and forth between listening to it in English and listening to it in Japanese.
I haven't done that yet. I bet it's really good in Japanese.
I haven't even thought to listen to it in Japanese.
It is better in Japanese.
Oh, I bet. But, dude, there's so many layers to Tatooine Rhapsody that... First time around watching it, I was just kind of like, this is okay. Like, mm-hmm. I like kind of like glossed over it because I was just so ready to get to the Trigger episode. I was so ready to get to see Amaishi's work on Star Wars. Like, I was telling Steve in our lobby when we were waiting on you that, like, man.
Right outside the studio.
In the studio. We have this lobby in the studio.
The studio lobby.
The studio lobby. Anyways, I was telling
Library.
Him that.
I mean lobby.
I was telling the man over here that whoever was on the creative board and was just like, what studios do we need to get in here to like do Star Wars bits? And some guy was like, yeah, we should get a Maishi from Trigger. I was like, that man needs a Medal of Honor for doing the world a service.
It's pretty good animation.
Oh, dude.
Okay, so, but episode
anyways,
two.
Anyways, Tatooine Rhapsody.
Tatooine Rhapsody. Okay, so really quick shout out. Tamara Morrison.
Yep.
Returning as
Boba Fett.
As Boba Fett. Bobby Moynihan as Gee. And Joseph Gordon-Levitt as Jay, the main character.
I do like Joseph Levitt Gordon.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Joseph.
Star.
Levitt Gordon Joseph.
Fairly Star. Your three kids are Joseph Gordon and Levitt.
No, they're Jamie Lee Curtis.
Oh, good
also
Lord.
Tommy Lee and
or
Jones.
Tommy Lee and Jones.
So I think we should get Steven's viewpoints on this because mine are going to take the longest. I literally have a page and a half about this.
So I do want to say, like, just as a fan and also a musician, just someone who is like in the kind of like punk rock, like indie rock,
mm-hmm.
The music, the soundtrack in this, it felt like a 2000s movie.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I loved it so much. It like, because like for me, that was my like early childhood. Like that music. So I'm sorry, but like that music like was like, this is like my oldest memories being brought up right now. The song they play is great. The music is so good. The guitar part is amazing. Like I, as a musician, I appreciate this episode so much. And then I also just like really love like the, this is one of the ones that Steven's laughing at me.
No, I'm just thinking I'm going to have an unpopular opinion.
This is one of the ones that,
oh yeah, you're outnumbered.
This is one of the ones that can like, this one fully fits into the Star Wars universe as we know it.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it goes further, but I want my opinions for last because they're going to take the longest.
Okay, go ahead, Steven.
I actually like this episode more than the first time I watched it.
Okay.
Yeah, when you thought it didn't exist in Star Wars?
Well, no, I didn't say I didn't think it. It just didn't feel like a Star Wars story.
Oh, I did not get that at all this time around.
Yeah, this time around it felt more Star Wars than it did the first time, which is why I liked it more.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, because as I was watching it the second time, the overall story beats of, you know, Boba Fett, because like there's this, the background story of the main character, and he was, you know, Padawan during Order 66.
Mm-hmm.
But you have, but the that's just kind of like filler. The main story is their band, their bass player is wanted. Also, and has a price on his head.
I did not get that he was a Hutt first time I watched this.
I didn't either.
I was like, oh, really? This is some kind of weird slug thing. And my brain wasn't like, weird slug thing in Star Wars. Those are Hutts. That's what we call Hutts.
Well, there, I mean, there's, you know, 6 million races in the galaxy. There's got to be some other that's a weird slug
thing. I figured this was just a Hutt wearing a wig.
I got more slime than slug, like, the first time around. And thought he was more of, like, a gelatinous being than, like, a slug.
I do think it's interesting to see a Hutt in a non-syndicate role, though.
Yeah, who's specifically escaping the syndicate.
Yeah, but I, you know, the
you're
the
allowed to comment.
Oh no, I'm saving my comments. The second, like, I got a whole
the
thing.
Second watch through,
all positive.
I did get this. I did in like the story beats of like there's somebody with a price on their head placed by the Hutts, and a bounty hunter, Boba Fett, is after them for it. And then the main character brokers some sort of a deal to get them out of the bind. Like, it did feel way more Star Wars to me this time around. Again, like, it's still not my favorite, but it's no longer my least favorite.
It's one of my favorite from the season so far. All right, Brady.
It is my favorite. It was not originally my favorite. The Ninth Jedi and then Twins was my two. After this third time watching Visions, because we, at one point, were going to record this 2 weeks ago, I thought we were, and then we decided to do Jango Fett, I had watched Visions for 7 episodes, and I fell more in love with it. And this time around, I fell more in love with it anyways, because while I am not a musician, my entire childhood and my entire teenage years were molded by music. I listen to music on such more of a level than just, you know, hey, I listen to a song.
Yeah.
I respect the production. I'm a very big progressive metal fan. This series has a direct inspiration from an anime from the mid-2000s called Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, which was about an indie group band in Japan that wanted to come to America, and it was absolutely amazing. The fact that he turned his lightsaber into a mic is absolutely awesome. The fact that Boba Fett crowd surfs, which I have done. I am a very big concert goer.
I don't think Boba Fett intended to crowd surf.
It doesn't matter. He got the feeling of being able to feel like a god. I have in fact crowd surfed, and for the 5 second, like maybe 10 seconds that I was riding on the crowd from the back to the front in that Killswitch Engage concert, I felt like I was untouchable. I felt like I was a literal divine being.
Untouchable.
As I'm being touched by hundreds
of people are getting handsy.
Dude, it's a feeling that like you have to feel to describe. Like,
I don't know that I'll ever feel that.
Dude, 5 people can lift you up to crowd surf, I'm pretty sure. If Chris Farley can crowd surf, you can.
That's valid.
I
just take my inspiration from School of Rock, and it didn't work for Dewey Finn the first time around. It worked eventually, but anyway, continue.
But
Had to get my Jack Black
reference. One of my major things that I love about this is that the surface level of idea of the story beats of this episode is that it shows a up and coming band that's indie. Like, they're clearly indie, they're clearly underground. Like, they even say that they've had 3 shows and they've never been able to finish. Like, they want to be a band so bad. Their name is cool. Their name is Star Waver. Like, it's so cool.
Who?
And it shows another side of Star Wars that as a frequent concert goer and a very frequent vast genre of music listener that I am, it shows a concert venue that we never get to see. The only type of musicians that in music that we get to see are either in bars or crime lord dens.
I will say I did
enjoy...
They're
playing jizz.
Yes,
I did enjoy seeing the Cantina band.
I enjoyed seeing them sweat, like they were freaking out.
It's the coming of age, like discovery of punk rock movie.
Yeah,
that we all watched in the 2000s.
And it's amazing, and I love the idea of this band being sponsored by Jabba the Hutt, and you get to like at their prime, you get to see them on Coruscant. floating on stages and having bubbles with fish go behind them and like these crazy things, and you get to and the real meaning behind this is that they are doing good in a better and bettering the galaxy in one of the most darkest times in Star Wars history.
Yeah, like you listen to the lyrics of the song, it's literally like freedom,
it is like be yourself. And what is amazing about this is they are giving hope to people in the smallest way possible that they can without having to go and join a rebellion and go, you know, funnel information through an illegal back trade, back way, and risk being arrested.
No Bothan spies had to die. Yeah, to no, bring yeah, this no. Hope to the
like, not, nothing like that. They are doing.
I'm proud of that one.
They are doing.
That was good.
They are delivering a vast amount of hope in a dark time. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to see them like almost galaxy wide. People are watching. You see the kids like loving this, man. Mm-hmm. That means that they are giving hope to people in the darkest time in the galaxy to look forward to something. Mm-hmm. Meaning they can spend maybe, you know, 50 credits and buy a ticket.
And then an Inquisitor watches the concert and goes, "I remember that kid."
Yeah, well, you know, he has Hutt. He has Jabba the Hutt. Like, anyways.
Quizzes care about Java.
Another thing is there was a Red Hot Chili Peppers insert into the in the episode. When they're fleeing, when Boba Fett's like chasing them down in the beginning, the same exact song from the very beginning of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers song when they're diving from movie when they're diving from the airplane plays in the background.
Who's the villain in that movie?
Ivan Ooze.
Oh, Mr. Purple Nose Goo?
Yeah.
I remember that movie. Yeah, okay.
Freedom!
I remember that movie.
Anyways,
I was like 5 when that movie came out.
Yeah, I was pretty young too. There's a Red Hot Chili Peppers. There's a Red Hot Chili Peppers insert into that. So there's another layer of a level of respect and love for music, which is another reason why I love JoJo's Bizarre Adventure so much. Because all the stands are named after bands and songs. Anyways, the main villain's name is Dio, for crying out loud.
It's going over Josiah's head.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He claimed to be a musician earlier.
I'm a musician. I didn't say I know a lot about, like, musicians. I play music.
Dio was one of, like, the founding fathers of, like, hard rock and metal. He was the second vocalist for Black Sabbath after Ozzy Osbourne.
I could not name a Black Sabbath song if you had a gun to my head.
You can't name Paranoid? Have you ever played Guitar Hero?
A little. I wasn't allowed to for most of my life.
Oh my god.
We're having a
midlife
crisis here, guys.
I am having a midlife crisis because I'm 10 years older than I actually am. I love you know, the fact that they are a family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they originally, they're just like, oh, we're gonna give up, and then V5 like plays the recording of all of them together, and then they feel, they get the feeling, man. They know that they are a family.
Yeah,
they are a family, and they gotta stick together.
I got chills, bro.
Yeah, dude. Like I started, I almost started crying watching it this time,
when they,
man.
Because it's when they start playing, he's like, "All right, let's go," and they're like, "One, two, three," and then they start playing, and everyone's like, "All right, we gotta."
Yeah, man, and like he force jumps like 50 feet in the air, screaming at the top of his lungs. Like this, there's so much passion and love behind this band. I do like the
flamethrower bass.
Yes, dude. Like the straight up Mad Max Fury Road. Like I love this. I loved watching. Like there's more to them than just being, you know, like Jizz, for example. They're these weird butt-headed race aliens that have a weird mouth that can play needle nose instruments, and that's it. They're background characters. Or like, you know, the only way you're going to know that that blue elephant playing a keyboard is a worldwide musician is if you really read comics. But outside of that, you don't know anything.
You know, ever since ever since the second generation of Pokemon, I've always just referred to that blue elephant guy as Fampy.
I completely agree. Yeah, dude. But like, you know, like I'm a very big music fan. I love music. Music is a very big part of me and my life. I'm not a musician, but I love music, and there is so much love and appreciation for music in this episode. It's good, man. It gives me chills thinking like that they were literally willing to put their life on the line to stand up for what they believe in. They were like, we are going to finish this song. We are going to finish a show. And if you don't like it, kill us now. But hey, we're going to be the greatest band ever, and you can be our first sponsor. Like, they put everything on the line, man.
I did like how he just like publicly challenged Jabba.
Yeah, dude, the biggest
in front of the whole
all of Boonta Tatooine. Eve. Yeah, but everybody, man, like it's totally punk. It's all about being punk. It's all about not caring about what the man thinks, sticking to your beliefs, and fighting for what you believe is your right to do what you want to do in your dream. Like, it's totally punk. Fully 100%, man. Like, they were willing to die for what they believed in. Good. Dude, it's so good. It's so good.
I loved this episode.
Like, I hope fans listening to this can go back and watch this and appreciate this episode so much more.
Heads up, it's Galactic Dreamer on Spotify.
I'm going to be bumping it anyways.
You can go listen to the song itself. Oh.
Dude, the lyrics are powerful. They're motivating. They're like, it's not just freedom. It's like, we will find you among the stars, and we will go as far as light can take us. Like, it's so empowering.
Yeah,
it's totally punk, and I love it. Like I said, I'm gonna be stuck. I'm probably not gonna have a whole lot to say about a lot of the other ones, but the title card is a reference to a Queen song.
Like, yeah. I do like the title of the episode.
They have a Red Hot Chili Peppers insert. The title card is a reference to like a Queen track. Like,
Steven, care to follow that up? Any other final comments?
I mean, I've already made all my comments about this episode.
there's
nothing really to follow up with after that.
It's great.
I'm sorry. I love this episode.
I already mentioned the celebrity.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, and Bobby Moynihan. So episode 3, the twins,
and as great as Tatooine Rhapsody is,
some of the best animation.
Here is the golden ticket.
Yeah, this is some of the best, just because it's so, I don't know, it's very trigger,
it's very Amishi specifically.
Yeah, it's very unique. Like, you can identify it almost immediately.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like when I watched the previews for this, when I saw the art, I was like, oh my god.
Like, if you want to say, like, the episode 2 had, you know, character, had the most character in terms of its messaging, this one had the most character in terms of its animation, I think.
Completely.
Like, I was telling Brady back out in the lobby that just how they animated the perspective on the X-Wing when he's going to, like, after...
When he puts the... When he
punches the booster.
And he decides to use the hyperspace drive to...
slice the destroyer in half. Yeah. Like, the way that they animated the change in perspective on the X-Wing... As it's like, it has a really long nose, and then the length between the nose and the cockpit slowly disappears as the wings and the cockpit get bigger.
As they get closer.
And then, right before it actually goes, you have that kind of like reverse, you know, fisheye lens, and the whole X-Wing just elongates and then punches it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
so well done.
Oh, it is. And like, the feel that you get for this, even his outfit is referenced to, is like, it is... I feel like when I look at it, when I look at, what is it? What's his name? Is it Kare?
I think it was Kare.
Yeah. It was Kare. Yeah, when I look at his outfit, I think of Han Solo.
Yeah, it's like underneath.
This whole episode is just is a love letter to episode 4.
It is. Because you've got
so many references.
Oh man, like R2 Duo is like a more hasty version of R2.
Yeah, because you've got Kare, who starts out as...
He's in the Sith power armor.
Yeah, he starts out as an Imperial, and then when that gets stripped away, it's...
Oh dude, in the trigger clothes shred. Yeah.
All you can think of is just, he doesn't have a lightsaber, he has one half of a giant pair of scissors.
Yeah, yeah. Josiah has no idea.
I know,
what
he doesn't
about.
Get the reference.
And we were talking about Kill la Kill. Because that was the whole point of Kill la Kill was not being controlled by like societal norms, and like outfits don't define
the
like who
Kill
you
la
are.
Kill is it? It's a triple entendre.
There's a lot of ideologies in there too.
Well, just the title is a triple pun.
Yeah.
Because it's Kiru, which is just, you know, Japanese word for to kill.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, a bunch of clothes that kill people. But it's also Japanese slang term for school uniform.
Yeah.
And it's also a Japanese verb to cut with a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
You have explained this before.
I know.
It's still going over my head.
It's on Netflix. And it's only...
The anime is on Netflix.
And it's only like 24 episodes. It's not long.
It's not long at all. But, oh my goodness, yes.
You last time we talked about this, you said you hadn't watched Gurren and you didn't watch Gurren. The reason they can breathe in space is a reference to Gurren.
Yeah, I haven't seen Gurren.
You need to watch Gurren. Gurren is what gave birth to Kill la Kill.
I didn't enjoy... Like, the first time watching, this one was like... I enjoyed it because it was Trigger. And I enjoyed it because it was so similar to Kill la Kill. Which I had just watched through, like, a second time when Visions came out. And it was still, like, you know, one of my top favorite animes.
Is Kill la Kill the only Trigger thing you've seen?
No.
Oh.
But, I mean, it's like... Kill la Kill is like one of my top all animes.
It's
so
good. It's good.
And this short was so close to it in terms of style.
Well, it's done by the same guy. Yeah.
I mean, a one guy can have multiple styles, but anyways.
No, Maishi only has one style.
God, I love this one the second time around. I liked it way more than I did the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
I was fairly... As someone who doesn't watch anime and so doesn't understand
any
of the deep references, and
there's a lot of references to older works.
And
like,
I when I saw Trigger Presents, I was like, oh, that's one that the other guys like.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's a notable studio.
This one was, it was good. I wasn't a. So I'm, there's. The episodes of Visions seem to be able to be split into two different, like, sides, where some of them do a lot of world building for a 15-minute episode to then have like a 2-minute like climax, and then some of them kind of just have like a 15-minute climax where like that's where the action is happening. That's where this one is one of those where it kind of just like jumps right into like into the action. And this time around, I enjoyed more the ones that were that spent time like world building. And so Tatooine Rhapsody was one that didn't... It jumped straight into the action, but it didn't need to spend time world building because of how much, like, a lot of it was just inferred.
From already known knowledge.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, that, but also just the setting. Because, like, when they get shot down, you can see, like, where they are. So that tells you, like, okay, this is the remnants of some sort of Star Wars conflict.
Unlike and the Bride, which is completely new.
Mm-hmm. Right. So with
both, that was my thing. So, like, I didn't like this one as much as, like, the next...
The next
four episodes.
Yeah, no.
Which is all, like, a bunch of, like, world building or setting the scene. And then, like, the Bride is so quick.
It is.
We'll get into the Bride.
I have some stuff I want to say about the Bride, too. But
I love her boots.
What? Whose boots?
Whose boots? Are you talking about Am's?
No.
I thought you were talking about our secretary.
Someone else in the studio.
No, in the Bride.
You're shooting high. Same.
The Jedi's boots in the Bride.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the points, like, I want
to
talk about.
I didn't mean to bring up the Bride. We'll get to the Bride.
Okay, anyways, Am's got some cool boots, too, with her lightsaber stilettos.
Yeah. Her lightsaber everything, bro.
Yeah, dude. Anyways, you would appreciate the twins a lot more if you actually watched Trigger Stows. Because a big thing too for, like, anime production fans is Trigger is half of one of the biggest animation labels in the history of animation. They are the half of the team of Gainax, which are notably known for doing Neon Genesis Evangelion, which is a...
What an experience.
Is a literal pillar of animation.
It is. And I watched it when I was, like, 10.
Oh, man. That's why you're a Sith.
it messed me up.
Yeah, it would definitely mess you up watching.
I did not know how to feel after watching that episode.
Yeah.
That show.
The show and the three movies and you need to watch the movies.
I know everything that happens. I've got all the spoilers, but I just haven't
seen it. Trigger is a notable studio. They're half of a team that split, and A1 Productions is the other team. And Maishi did the last thing Gainax ever produced, which is Gurren Lagann, which is just like how Neon Genesis Evangelion is a pillar, Gurren Lagann is a pillar of animation. It is a literal staple of anime. And then when he leaves and creates Trigger, he creates another banger show of Kill la Kill. And he just continues and continues and continues to make great shows, like BNA on Netflix is absolutely amazing. It's my favorite Trigger show of all time. You would appreciate the twins so much more, like me and Steven, if you just sat down and watched a Trigger show, because while they look absolutely amazing, they are deep. They deal with entendres. They deal with ideologies. They deal with very deep subjects and things to do with people, like Gurren Lagann deals a lot with what it means to be human and, like, breaking your limits, and nothing is impossible. You can do the impossible, do the undoable, break the unbreakable. That is literally a song in the show. The twins is amazing. When he, you know, gets rid of his power armor and it, like, turns into shreds is a reference to Kill la Kill.
Both of their outfits are references to Kill la Kill.
To Kill la Kill. Are references to Gurren Lagann. It's at, like, the level of detail animation where when our duo takes control of the X-Wing, which is the first time I've ever seen a astromech droid fire a ship. She literally bends the blaster rounds and they, like, snake away.
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, it's amazing. I love the orange on the stormtroopers. Like, they're stark white and there's just, like, strips of orange. I love the over-the-top dramatic effects that have no reason to be there. Like, why is his blaster's ignition so large getting out of the hangar bay? Like,
yeah, it's all of that level of exaggeration.
Is Trigger.
Uh-huh.
Is Trigger and is in Maishi. Like, when he puts the kyber crystal in at the end and he, like, does the, like, extends it, and when he's doing the hyperdrive and you see all those stars come out, that is literally the Gainax star.
Yeah.
That's great. You know, the like six arms with the whips, and like she like starts whipping him, and he puts the kyber crystal in, and he like catches them like the ribbons and then cuts them up. It's just, it's so fluid. It's so beautiful. The man deserves a medal who suggested Amaishi.
I will say, I do love that they use light whips in this.
Oh, dude, I love it too.
You never see them.
Uh-uh. They are a thing. I don't know if you knew that, Josiah.
We've covered them before.
He doesn't read the comics.
There's a snippet in one of the like encyclopedias that Obi-Wan tried to make a light nunchuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he scrapped it. He's like, that's not gonna work.
It's a bad idea.
But it was a thought at one point by a canon character. I love everything about it. I love how Kari like slid underneath her and tried to get her, and then she was just like, "Oh yeah, you can extend your lightsaber. Well, I have a heel blade."
I love it.
And then I love the like staple setting to Tatooine Suns. That,
yeah.
As much as I hate Tatooine and I hate sand, and I've never seen an ocean.
Everywhere.
It gets everywhere, and they're not even near sand. They're in a field.
I did like the symbolism of the twin suns.
Oh yeah,
the twin,
there's so much references to A New Hope in this one. He does the like the OG poster pose with the lightsaber straight up in the air.
Yes. But like, as much as I hate Tatooine, I love the twin setting suns. I love it. And I loved... Yeah. Well, not quite that bad, but...
Yeah. I feel like we're starting an episode of Robot Chicken.
That's the exit,
and
bro.
And we're getting canceled. We're not canceled.
Demonetized.
We don't get demonetized on this episode of the podcast.
All right, and that is my cue to go home.
But I loved seeing the twin suns with the colors.
Yeah.
With Amaishi's level and detail of color. That was really nice. I also, do we know if the Acolyte was thought of or in production prior to this? Because the Acolyte's idea is twins that are formed from the dark side. And what is twins' whole thing? Twins forged from the dark side.
I think
Acolyte, I draw parallels.
Yeah, I think Acolyte was announced the same time Visions was.
Okay.
Because it was part of like their massive announcement
Their like timeline.
Republic Rangers, Ahsoka, Acolyte, Visions, Andor, Book of Boba Fett,
mm-hmm.
all the various TV shows, they announced them.
Well, they can announce them and not be working on them.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, Visions and the Acolyte were announced at the same time.
Okay. Well, I was just curious if, like, there was a parallel.
There might be.
You know.
Because this is another one of the episodes that doesn't do anything that explicitly would suggest this is an alternate.
Yeah.
You know, an alternate
crashes
universe.
On Tatooine.
Yeah.
He literally crashes on Tatooine.
They've released a synopsis.
Of Acolyte? Acolyte?
I don't think it's exactly what we were thinking it was, but it is very... A former Padawan reunites with her Jedi Master to investigate a series of crimes.
That's the Acolyte? I thought it was about, like, the...
Well, it was like a...
I thought the Acolyte was like the perspective of a Sith, wasn't it? The High Republic.
Certainly hope they're not going to try to make the Acolyte some Jedi rank, because it's very much a Sith rank.
No. I think by former Padawan, it may mean like a fallen...
Like a fallen Padawan turned into Acolyte. Yeah, because it is a Sith rank.
Oh, so Juhani.
Mm-hmm.
But Juhani then was redeemed pretty quickly.
Or you kill her, apparently.
You can.
I didn't even know.
Well,
that was
you
an
can
option.
You can redeem her if you go dark side. I mean, she just falls with you.
Well, it was with Juhani, light side. You
no,
redeem her.
I understand.
Or
you kill her. Yeah.
Dark Jedi. You convince her to be on the dark side, and she joins you. And then you both lie to the council and say that she's redeemed, and the council believes you.
I didn't know that killing her or anything else was an option other than just bringing her back to the light side. Nope. That's why I'm a Jedi.
The best outcome is taking her and Jolie, pretending that you're light side, and then when you get to the temple on Rakata Prime, and you were talking to Bastila, you go, I'll join you, Bastila, be my apprentice. And she's like, okay. And then Juhani and Jolie are like, what? And then you turn around and you kill both of them. And then when you get back to the shoreline, Mission and Karth are like, where's Jolie and Juhani? And you're like, they're dead. They didn't want to join us in the dark side. And Karth is like, no, you betrayed me. And he runs away into the distance. And then Mission's like, this can't be. And you go, Zalbar, kill Mission. And he's like, but I can't. And you're like, you owe a life debt to me. Kill her. And Zalbar's just like, okay. And Mission's like, no. And then dies.
This is not real.
This is the dark side ending.
This is not real.
This is the dark side ending of Coder 1, and I love it.
You just like screw the whole squad, man. We didn't make a family.
Oh, and Kart and Candorous Ordo and all of this is just like, yeah, the Sith are pretty strong. I follow you.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Coder 1 has some of the best endings in video games.
Oh, wow.
Gotta love Candorous Ordo. So, he knows where his priorities lie.
For all you listeners, during that whole thing, Josiah is just like rubbing his forehead with his hand, just staring at me wide-eyed in disbelief.
On a completely unrelated note, the celebrity cameos for the twins are Allison Brie and Neil Patrick Harris.
Is Neil Patrick Harris Kare?
Yes.
Who is Allison Brie? I don't know this name.
She plays Am. She's from obviously. She's from Community. I think is her biggest role.
I never watched Community.
Yeah.
But I know Neil Patrick Harris. Yeah, she doesn't look familiar.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Josiah showed me the IMDb page for her.
Anyway, any final comments on the twins?
The man who suggested it deserves a medal.
Yeah.
For giving
a brilliant inclusion in Visions.
For giving the world the treat that is an Amaishi Star Wars project.
Out of all of Visions Season 1, if there's one studio I'd like to see them repeat, it's Trigger.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would like
to see... What other episode does Trigger do?
The Elder.
But it's not Amaishi. It's a different...
Because the Elder's one of my favorite.
You know, I'd also like to see Ghibli do one.
Yes.
Especially because
Miyazaki's gonna be like, no.
Well, Star Wars is all about spaceships and flying things, and Miyazaki is in love with planes and flying. They feature in everything he's made.
No, I know.
Okay, so I think
even his original manga before he was an animator.
With how much time that we spent on Tatooine Rhapsody, we'll wrap up with The Village Bride. And then we'll pick up with
I apologize.
No, you don't. It's a good podcast. We'll pick up with the Ninth Jedi to start the next episode, which will be...
That'd be a great start.
Great, because the Ninth Jedi is amazing.
It is.
Can I just real quick, before we... I in my memory, like kind of like Mandela effect, I thought there was like a mix of Jedi and Sith when they all ignite, and then, oh no, they're all Sith.
Yeah, no, pretty much all of them except for the two... And, the one dude that does nothing.
I remembered all of them being Sith, including the young kid.
Ethan's good. She gets her green lightsaber, and then, right. Oh man, when he grabs the lightsaber and ignites it, and there's like the extra ring, which just shows that he's that, like so much more powerful than.
I
loved that little extra ring.
Anyway, we'll talk about all that next week. Right. This week, The Village Bride. I loved this episode.
I did too. I loved the calmness of it until the very, very end. Like, I love just like the simple walking as he carries her through the forest and up the mountain.
It was all story.
It was really relaxing. And it's just like, this is really nice, just like slow paced storytelling.
It was the first time we see the katana, say, like light katana.
Yeah.
Which it was funny the way they did it. She ignited it, and it wasn't completely obvious that it was a katana
until
she spins it.
Yeah,
and it's a blade. And it's like, oh.
And I was like, okay.
I love it so much.
I like the idea that the Darksaber is not the only lightsaber that is a flat blade.
So,
Or it, like, has an edge.
I love that, like, we're seeing a part of the galaxy where the Force is not known as the Force.
Right.
See, that's the thing, is, like, my points that I have to make about this are a lot of questions, is, like, was Majina more like Bendu?
Possibly.
Was Majina not actually like the Force, but more of like they're able to tap into the memories of the planet, like how we talked about how like Bendu didn't die in that fight. Like he is the planet itself.
It's also possible that Majina is the name of the planet and that this is a sentient planet.
Yes, because those do exist in Star Wars.
Yeah, and they're all, for as far as I know, they're all Force sensitive planets.
Yes.
And so this could be one of those planets and the people that live on it. Because you know what? The Yuuzhan Vong, that was their original homeworld.
I feel like if we had a drinking game for our podcast, it would be whenever Steven mentions the Yuuzhan Vong.
I don't mention them often. Anywho, I don't mention them often?
Yes. You haven't in the past three episodes, but you mentioned them more often.
I've been here the whole time? Yeah.
No. Okay, so... Because they start out on a Force-sensitive planet.
Yes.
And they were attuned to the Force because of...
The planet.
The planet that they evolved on.
Because the planet was so Force-sensitive that anything that was native to the planet was so just naturally
my interpretation, like, the way I understood the Majina was this was a similar situation. They're just a race of people who have either settled on this world long enough or evolved on this world that they've gained their connection to the Force through the planet, so they call the Force... The name of the planet.
And see, but this
kind of like Ewa.
Yeah. And this is also one of those things where, like, I believe it could be the Force. It could also be a living planet where it's a planet so in tune to the Force that it is sentient and, you know, it has a name. But it could also be another situation where it's like the Night Sisters of Dathomir's night magic, where it's not quite the Force. It's something completely different.
Was their magic something completely different, or is it just the Force manifested differently?
No,
it's dark side magic.
But it is not... It is specifically stated to be magic.
I always did think it was like a... They are not Force sensitive, but they found a way to tap into the Force, the dark side.
But see, they call it magic, that implies that it's not the Force.
Right, but the ancient Sith called their Force connection magic. Because they called it Sith sorcery and Sith alchemy.
Well, stay tuned on the podcast when we eventually cover Clone Wars and we'll talk about
it. Anyways, I don't know. I liked the idea of like not quite an alternate power per se, but like something that is outside the tradition, the traditional idea of what is just the Force.
Right.
And I feel that's what this is, because when they walk up to that and they touch that stone obelisk,
it resonates
and it literally creates a vision that people outside that touch that can see.
What is it called? I can't remember.
Memories of the planet.
Yeah.
I was what's the cantrip called that you have in RDD?
Animotus. Yeah, it's basically that. Like when they're on that hill, they can see those memories without having to touch it. They didn't say the incantation. They didn't touch the obelisk. They didn't say, Majina, may you rise. But yet they could see them as kids making a pathway for fish.
Right.
And then the planet's memories from when the Confederacy stripped the planet.
Right.
You know? So like, I think there's a lot of potential here, and I want more of it.
Thing. And I would say, though, that it is still some... It is some form of the Force, though, because the Jedi, she could sense it, and she recognizes it as the Force. And then at the end, when she's confronting the pirates...
She says, Majina, may you rise, and may the Force go with you.
Right, so she's... To me, that's an implication that they're the same thing, just two different cultural takes on it.
I could see that. I like the idea of it is... connected to the Force in some way, like a small ley line, but it's a different version of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like on Lulth with the Lulth wolves and how they can literally like teleport right. across the planet.
Right.
Like they don't say that's the Force, but we know it's not a traditional thing that regular wolves can do.
Right.
You know, and then they find the realm between worlds where they can literally traverse time.
It might be the difference between the living force and the cosmic force.
It could be. It could be.
Majina could be. This world connects to the cosmic force.
And not the living
force. And not the living force.
Yeah.
That would explain how it's able to project.
Yes. And so strongly like that.
Yeah.
Like it was very strongly. Like they felt the vibrations. Of the earth falling. But yeah, like I think there's more to that, and I loved how much world building was on it, and I want to see more of it. I'm disappointed that the duel got its own comic.
It got a comic?
I think it got a comic.
I think that was evidence of Disney being like, this is the one that got the most like
everybody was up in arms about
it. Look, it's Kurosawa. Yeah. But like yeah. There's so many like Tatooine Rhapsody
they should have all had comics.
Should have its own show.
Yes, it should have its own show. That should have been its own like small show where they could like them going up to stardom.
Ninth Jedi should get a novel.
Yes,
I think Ninth Jedi would work best as a novel
or a trilogy series.
Yes, but specifically as a like
a trilogy novel.
Yeah, it would work so well in book form.
Yes,
it
would work probably. So well yeah,
as it a would. Book. It would work great, and then like. Comics for like The Bride.
The Bride would work great as a comic.
It would work great as a comic.
Especially with like the, yeah, with how much visual, like the memories of the planet and everything, yes. And also like yes. The how simple but intense like the combat was, like
The yeah, Bride. Yeah, and like great. Key line features like when her boots separate and the lights on the side like light up,
mm-hmm.
And they have that you know when you're like really tired and you're driving at night and you're looking at it like a red light and you can see the red light. Stretching on the side, I don't know what that's yeah. A glare. You know what I'm talking about?
It's things that people with astigmatism see. I can't remember.
I don't have astigmatism, but
well, when you're tired, yeah, I get to.
But it's like that. It's that like.
It's a diffraction of
it's
the
like,
light.
Yeah, but it like stretches like that, and right. Her boots do that, and that would work great in comic form.
It would.
It would be amazing
just to see like the streak of her boots like mm-hmm. Go from, you know, the left side of one page to the right side of the yes. Opposing page. Would yes. Be a really great visual.
It would be a great panel, man. And that's the thing is, like, the duel's great. I'm not trying to detract from it or, like, denote it in any way.
I do like how she took the bolt and didn't and just, like, she made it reverse its path yeah, right back at the gun.
Uh-huh. She didn't do what Kylo does and just, like, stop it.
And then let
she,
it go.
She, like, threw it at him.
Yeah.
Like, she which, reversed man, bro, its path. It's so funny. It is... Because that was one of the first times we saw that ability on screen was when Kylo used it.
Uh-huh.
And then it shows up 7 times in Visions.
Yes.
It's like, it's in Twins. It's yeah. In this one. I can't remember. It's in another one. I can't remember which one.
But like...
But yeah, it shows up a lot.
I want more on this exploration with Majina. I want to see more of that.
Yeah.
Because there's potential there. There's potential with wondering what is going on. I want to know what her boots are. Those things are cool.
What's interesting, I want to know
I think
if
they
this
altered
is
her speed.
During Empire or post-Empire.
Force Dash.
Yeah, but why did her boots separate for that?
Yeah,
extra mobility?
To me, it seemed like the boots were augmenting her.
They were augmenting her speed.
Because I saw a post on Reddit where it was just like, we've never seen Force Dash... Except this one time, and it's
you know, Menace.
Phantom Menace.
It's in episode one when they're on the carrier and they're on the station. Yeah,
and they don't even do it. It looks like they're just like, like they don't make it look like a like intentional dash. It looks like they like.
Well, they get
traverse
they get,
sideways.
Well, they get blurry, and then they're like down
yeah.
The hallway.
Well, yeah, but
the
it
camera
looks
pans.
It looks like they just stand there and get blurry and move, but not like they like actually like, move to run, in a way that you would think that it's normally depicted in. Other
yeah right
entries,
but the boots splitting indicated that they did something that there was a significance to that.
Yeah,
if anyone knows Sam Witwer and can get him in touch with us, we would love to talk about Visions with Sam Witwer. I'm sure he could explain all of the Majina and everything to us.
Well, he couldn't because he's a Sith. So
yeah,
Sam Witwer.
Yeah, he's a Sith.
Yeah,
but he's also a not Sith.
I'm just going to point out the fact that he
got the role as Maul because he told the script writers that this is not something he would do.
No, I know, but he also was Starkiller.
Yeah, who is also
Galen Merrick.
Who is also a Sith.
Was Sith.
It doesn't matter. The dude has literally the core principles of the Sith ingrained in him, where he made them rewrite the script.
Yeah.
He would not understand what Majina is.
I'm sure he would. Anyway.
Maybe Bendu, but not quite Majina.
That is all the time that we have for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. It has been an absolute pleasure. You can reach us with any more questions, comments, or concerns at our email, a2ta.humancyborgrelations@gmail.com.
It's such a good email.
It is. It's great.
It's real long. You can also so fitting. You can also hit us up on Reddit. Is that a thing that you can do on?
Yeah.
We're on Reddit. I don't know the Reddit.
The Reddit username is just a2-ta. Just the droid name.
Do we have a subreddit? Do we have an r/?
We have an r/ A2TA podcast.
Nice.
Hit us up. It's completely empty.
Anyway, yeah, that's all we've got for today. We'll be back next week. Not next week. I didn't even mention this. This is our May 4th episode. This is our 1 year anniversary of the podcast episode.
Today is not the May 4th though.
No, we're recording it before that. But this will be released on May 4th as our 1 year anniversary. We'll be watching Visions 2 as soon as it comes out and discussing it as soon as possible. Steven takes a little bit to watch stuff, so it may be a little bit. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's all we got. Any final comments before we close out for today?
If any of the fans are sold on the Tatooine Rhapsody, you should really go watch Beck Mongolian Chop Squad.
Ooh, a plug.
Should let us know. Your favorite Visions episode is.
You should email us or talk on our subreddit page.
Yeah. Or just comment on this episode.
Yeah, that just works too.
Reach out to us in any way, shape, or form. Please let us know that you're real.
Like and subscribe. Press that bell notification.
And stop it. Okay, we're done. We're done.
And
we're
share to your friends, man.
We don't have a YouTube,
yes, share to your friends. Yes.
Tell Lee Flyers.
If they don't know a lot about Star Wars, point them to the Beginner's Guide episodes. If they want to hear us complain about Star Wars, we've got... I think somewhere around 5 or 6 episodes about that. Actually, I don't think the sequel trilogy has not been released yet. Never mind.
Neither has all the prequel.
Yes, but we don't complain much about Star Wars in those.
No, but I'm just saying.
Anyway, that's all we got for today. We'll see you next time.
Later, folks.
Alrighty.
May the Force go with you.
I was like, well, are you doing a new sign-off?
Just got to throw you off.
Adios.
Man.
Anyway, no, stop. Oh, Steven, now we got to do it again.
Later, folks.
This is my favorite part. This is the part I look forward to every time we record.
Say your line, Steven.
Alrighty.
May the Force go with you.
Adios. Adios.